Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
In the South, it's always college football season, and the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
All week, all year, it's all college football on the Chuck Oliver Show. And yesterday, I was talking about Blue Sky and really making a conversation, a comment about the Clemson Tigers. Appreciate everybody coming here again. College football conversation. We do it 2 hours a day. We had great guests in hour one. We'll have two more in hour two. I was talking about the blue sky for each ACC program in particular, because over the weekend I decided this is what I'm going to concentrate on. So I took the current members, and for each one of them, I was not playing the win-loss game. That's not what it is. It's just a general, in addition to a bunch of other stuff, just some general download about their schedule. And I'm going to go through it, and do they have a landmine? Do they have a monster? Do they have an opponent that is not beatable under any normal circumstance for them? You know, Georgia Tech plays Georgia. That's under any normal circumstance, that's not a beatable opponent. So do they have that, or do they have a landmine? So I was looking at, you know, like Tennessee, don't they, do they open with Virginia maybe? Is that right, Dan? Virginia. So, oh, by the way, Dan told me it's about an hour to Bluefield, and it is about 3 hours to Charlotte from Blacksburg. But so I'm looking at the schedule, and I'm trying to see, is there a landmine? Is there just an opponent who's not beatable? Like, what's it look like as part of everything else I'm factoring in? And for North Carolina, I said, all right, well, this is what I believe about this blue sky in general with Drake May and who they don't have at receiver and what the defense doesn't do. And there was a lot of dudding, but then there's like, hey, Drake May. So that'll kind of carry the argument a little bit. And that's what a quarterback does. That's how much I love it. I was like, they don't do this, this, or this. They have Drake May. I think they can win eight games. So, and that's just sort of the exercise. Well, for Florida State, I said they can win all the games. They can win all the games and get to the playoffs, obviously, if they're 13-0. I was like, but what if they have an imperfect resume? Okay, what's that look like? Because most likely Florida State, could they go 13-0? Sure, they could. There would probably be some context about, you know, what another team either didn't have on a particular day or didn't do on a particular day. But sure, they could do it. And so, and I wouldn't say that. Well, that's sports, Chuck. No, I wouldn't say that about Syracuse. Syracuse, they can go 13-0. Of course they can. You would stop listening to this program, and you should. Apologies to Dave Schultz. Apologies to Russ. Apologies to a lot of people. So, for Florida State, yeah. I said they could win all their games. But more likely, Florida State's playoff scenario is the Seminoles have an imperfect resume and the committee looks at what they do have and votes them in. And that most likely that would cap out at, like, if they have no losses, they're in. I think it caps out at one loss for Florida State. Then they get a playoff bid. If you have two losses this year and you're beating your shoe on the table and you're going, yes, well, let us in, the committee's going to look at you and go, come back next year. Like they turned the sign around, closed, be back, and it says 12 months. So that was that. Florida State could win all of them. And if they don't win all of them, all right, well, what would the resume look like? And I said the big takeaway to me was that the Clemson game wasn't nearly as impactful. Like, lose that game and it's season crushing. Before, you got forgiveness because it was Clemson. Now it's like, you lost to Clemson. Not that Clemson's bad, but they're a three-loss program potentially each season. And I got fixated on the LSU game, and I was like, dang, Clemson, you're not even the biggest, you know, in the final year before it's way easier to get, you're not the biggest hurdle. Non-conference game is, and not the Gators. So I was going through all this for Florida State. And I had multiple folks, and my first question, if I didn't, some of the people I knew, and I was like, hush up you went to Florida, or you went to a playoff team, like you went to Georgia, or you went to LSU, and you're like, nah, we'll get in the playoffs ahead of them. So I knew who you were. If I got a tweet from somebody, I was like, who do you root for? And that answer, nobody said Florida State. I got skepticism about the comment, and that's fine, because it's March, and it's fun. And what do you mean they could? Florida State's a playoff? You're buying the hype, or what am I drinking the Kool-Aid? You're buying into everything with Mike Norvell? I'm like, I ain't buying into anything. I'm evaluating. And my response to the folks I knew, I was like, yeah, I know who you root for. But to the few folks who had tweeted me or contacted me and said, what do you mean Florida State? A little high on them, aren't you? My response is, I'm talking about getting one of the four playoff seeds. And I would ask, what would you want Florida State to have that is beyond, I'll say, reason this year to reach an imperfect resume of 12-1 and they get a playoff spot? What would you want them to have that they don't have? Number one thing, you have to have competent coaching. You have to have coaching that won't undo things. So that's that. I've told you the ultimate thing, Willie Taggart at Oregon, I think they were 7-5. When Justin Herbert played, 7 wins. When he didn't play, 5 losses. That was it. That was the whole season. It's unreal. It also, I mean, if you ever doubt, Chuck, you overstate the importance of quarterback. No, I do not overstate the importance of quarterback. In college, especially, folks, it's barely not Friday night when it comes to college quarterback like that. Florida State has one of those guys. So once you check the box, do we have competent coaching? I think they have good coaching. So, but did we have competent coaching? Check. All right, now let's move on to the other. Just don't kill me. And like I said, I think Florida State's good. So there's that. All right, now let's move on to the player or the factors, the actual quarterback. How about that? They have a guy who impacts the game in every single way. And I mean, even the other stuff that I can't really measure, like leadership and heart and not give up. Like, you know what? I've told you about this. Go back. This is an old movie. This goes back to like maybe 1980. North Dallas 40. It was written by a guy named Pete Gent, who played tight end for the Dallas Cowboys, and then he wrote an expose about life in the NFL. Well, Mac Davis, who was an actor and singer, he played the quarterback of the North Dallas team, and he was supposed to be Don Meredith. Go find him. He gets in the huddle, and he's like, he drops a GD. We are not losing this game. He's pointing at the left tackle. He says, we are not losing this game. He said, I don't care if you have to break his leg. Keep that guy off me. Then he calls the play, and he goes out, and he's ready to make a play. Folks, there's something about that. Now, you don't get in the huddle anymore because, I mean, my gosh, why would you huddle? But Jordan Travis, gimme. And I thought he was a change-up, run-around guy who could be difficult in the open field. He can stand in the pocket, deliver the ball downfield. He can do what Robbie Ashford can't do well enough yet. Now, he can get way better at it, but my goodness, he can win the Heisman this year. That's how good Jordan Travis is. And when he looks at his left tackle, he leans in and he said, we not losing this game. Now, do what you got to do. I wouldn't hurt the guy. I'd get a holding penalty. I'd do that, and I don't care. I'd get a face masking. I don't care. Don't hit my quarterback. You're not hitting my quarterback. Whatever has to happen, I put Oswald in the rafters. You're not hitting my quarterback. So, Jordan Travis, they got that guy. Oh, by the way, and he may be the best open field runner on the roster, and that's from somebody who's down there, covers the team. So, that's your quarterback. Then you've got at least two guys, maybe three at running back. You have the offensive line way. It was better, best it's been last year in probably 5 or 6 years, and it's getting better. The receivers, here's the thing. Last year, you looked around on a week-to-week basis, and you're like, there's like a rotating cast of guys each week that I think I like. This guy, oh, well, he's not playing this week. Well, I like this other guy. And here's the thing. Like, those all, they made, and then there's one guy who just didn't play at all. Like, here they are all back. And you may have a bunch of receivers you like. Then there's the defense. You've got the NFL pass rush guy who, I don't, was he first rounder? I don't know. But he's back. That's not nothing. You've got everybody back except the NFL safety in the secondary. And so there's, you get to avoid fruit basket turnover in that area. That's not nothing. Okay. Now let's go back to the schedule. So that was, if you look at that, we got, you know, the season outcome in the middle and then all these spokes off that hub. And so it wasn't the win-loss game on the schedule. Said, you're playing the win-loss game in March? I was like, I don't know. I covered all of it. But if I just cover, and by the way, that schedule part was what I got to last. It always is what I go to last because I don't want it to color my perception at all. I want it to be like at, literally, I want it to be the, all right, now finally, give me some add-on information. Let's look at the schedule. Oh, snap, look who they play week one. Shouldn't take that paycheck. And they play Louisville, and it's like Louisville in 2006. Well, damn, was that 2006? In 2006, when Petrino had, I think Louisville went 13-1 and finished like fifth. So is it that Louisville? Oh, dang. This season's going to stink. Yeah, sometimes you look and you feel pretty good about it, and then you say, no matter how good I feel about it, those are two losses right there. So I said, I feel good about all this. This is an 8-9 win season. And you're like, I could feel good about all this. And if I was writing my analysis, because I now factor in the schedule, they go 6-6. Oh, my God. No. That didn't happen when I looked at Florida State's schedule last after everything else. And I spent all weekend doing this stuff. It's fun, man. And I here's the thing. I used to teach and coach. And then I was a writer, a corporate writer. I wrote press releases and radio scripts and quarterly reports and letters to investors. They said, Chuck, write this. I was like, sure. And I'll start tapping keys. Always been able to turn a phrase. When I was doing both of those other jobs, do you know what I was doing? This. And I'd spend all weekend. I used to live with a guy, Shannon Castleman, Shannon the Cannon, played third base on our softball team. Wasn't most accurate, but boy, he could whip it over to first. Just don't like sit behind first if you're there. We used to have like spiral bound notebooks, and we would come up with the entire draft. So like I was doing that same step. Now it's called a show topic. And so this past weekend, instead of it being a spiral bound notebook, I'm living in an apartment with Shannon the Cannon. I am spending my weekend with my spiral bound notebook, and it's got keys on it, and it's called Let's Figure Out the ACC. And like Michael Alford, I don't really include the ACC in my Florida State evaluation anymore. Fly, little one. They're back, man. Absolutely. They're back and could win the national championship this very season. That's how good they have. And I would ask you, what else would you want? We break. Come back next.
Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
We're about to talk South Carolina football. And we our next guest, maybe he was there that night. I don't know. I think he's maybe covered the team long enough. If we go way back in time, maybe it was 05, 06, there was a freshman recruit. And everybody does this, and I've been guilty of it. Tommy Beecher was a kid out of North Carolina, I believe, and I know what the gig is, all right, because I was there for August practice, and they had a scrimmage in the stadium, and so I'm on the field afterwards, and I've done this exact thing before. You're not from the local media. You don't care about anybody but the local kid from the area you're from, so you ask a leading question trying to get a good soundbite for your radio station. Boy, you picked the wrong head coach for that. Steve Spurrier was asked by some local reporter in North Carolina, Tommy Beecher looked good tonight, didn't he? He's like, I need a soundbite about Tommy Beecher. Steve Spurrier looked at this kid. He's like, no, Tommy Beecher is a lost freshman. And I was like, oh, my God. I was like, Steve Spurrier ain't playing the game, man. Now, he also would have told you if he was lights out and fantastic. But that would let – I was like, all right, do not invite Steve Spurrier to play the game. I need a soundbite. He ain't doing that. Want to welcome on right now. We're going to talk other things other than Tommy Beecher. He covers Gamecocks football and recruiting for Gamecock Central on 3 Sports. It is Wes Mitchell. Wesley, how you doing today, brother?
I'm good. I didn't have Tommy Beecher circa 2005 on my bingo card today, but you are bringing back some Steve Spurrier memories, my friend.
Yeah, my experience, even though I watched that happen, it was 2 or 3 years later, and at that time I was still local just in Atlanta, and so I'm up there before the Georgia game, and everybody else is asking relevant questions, and I was like, Coach, what makes Mark Richt's offense such a tough one to defend? You know what I'm doing. I'm wanting a soundbite I can take back to my station in Atlanta. He looked at me and said, it's not my job to pump up that program. He's like, you asked Mark Richt about his offense. I was like, oh, dang, I knew that. I'm sure you had Steve Spurrier moments as well. I thought it was awesome, by the way. That was my fault.
Oh, yeah, he was fantastic. We've all had our Spurrier moments. I'm surprised he didn't point you to the defensive coordinator and tell you to ask him about their offense. So I thought that was where that was headed. But, yeah, he was fantastic, always good for a soundbite, and still is if you can get him these days.
Yeah, he was. I think it was it Ron Cooper? He said, I don't know, bring him in. I didn't coach defense today. Whatever Saturday it was, the defense had been horrid that day, and he was like, I don't coach defense. Go get Ron. And I think it was Ron Cooper who was the defensive coordinator they brought in. All right, let's talk about what's going on there right now. And what's going on is this is supposed to be a really, really unusual story, and like overnight it's not. A big-time college football program hired an assistant coach during spring practice. Now it's South Carolina's turn. It was Florida's turn. This is normal. What's going on with South Carolina? Shane Beamer hired somebody?
Yeah, so you're referring to the hire to their offensive analyst role?
Sean Ryan is now in.
Yeah, so that's kind of the situation. They've been kind of – that's not an on-field role, obviously, and yeah. They kind of have been filling out some of those final positions. They obviously had the big coaching change on offense with Dow Loggins coming in to, you know, to be their offensive coordinator. And what you see these days is that there are so many just roles underneath those on-field coaches that a lot of times when spring ball starts, you're still filling those out. And South Carolina is actually still in the process of filling out their head nutritionist role as well. So, they've lost several guys to those off-the-field roles who have been able to get on-field opportunities at other places. And, that was just kind of the next move in line as far as filling out that staff and all those different analyst roles. I think we've seen Beamer kind of gravitate towards adding some guys with NFL experience. And that was just kind of the next in line move as far as filling out those spots.
Yeah, they had lost one of the analysts who's now QB's coach over at UAB. And so they go to the NFL for a guy. He was quarterback coach for the Lions at one point. And so with Carolina Panthers. And so you bring him in. That's a heck of a pair of eyes to have, analyze our guys. And now you can actually have more interaction with them. So it's not unusual now to have times in flux. All right, let's talk about, you mentioned Dow Loggins, and I kind of joked earlier in spring, Shane Beamer, there's two things. He got a new OC and no interest in my opinion on it. He was very clear in that. What is the general feel about the, quote, new offense or new approach or the new OC at least, and how he and Spence Rattler and everybody's meshing?
I think they've taken an approach in that they don't want to reinvent the wheel on offense. When you look at how they finished last season off, they went in with this sort of pro-style scheme, they called it, and I think they were kind of trying to do a little bit too much, frankly, on offense. So they kind of streamlined it late in the year. That allowed Spencer Rattler to play a little bit more free. That allowed the receivers you know, a chance to just go make plays on the ball. They obviously have Juice Wells back. So the things we have heard is that they've kind of taken some of the things that were successful last year. They've kept some of the same concepts. They've tried to streamline it a little bit. It's going to be a little bit more of a college offense in terms of how you do the play calling. A lot more like one-word calls and just maybe some more up-tempo stuff. I think they'll still be a true huddle team, which they were last year, but they want to allow Spencer Rattler to just go play. That seems to be when he is at his best, you know, making him comfortable. And that's the thing you hear. Now, obviously, the way these college football programs are run these days, you never really truly know what you're going to get from a new scheme until you get to game one in the fall. Even the spring game, I imagine, will be just a lot of the stuff they ran last year, because you don't want to give opponents really any inkling of what you're actually doing. So a lot of times in the spring, you know how it is. You're going to get the buzzwords. We're playing fast. We're putting guys in space. We're stretching the field vertically and horizontally. So that's a lot of what you're getting right now, frankly.
All right, I got to ask this question, and it's just you bounce back away from spring ball. Is there, like, South Carolina's women's game, women's basketball, has it reached the level of, like, local interest? I don't want to equate it to Pat Summitt in Tennessee, because that was over, like, 25 years. But, like, we got about a minute here. Just give a quick comment about, does it have a hold? Like, but the idea of it even being a revenue sport is a crazy idea to a lot of people in our footprint, which is the SEC, ACC.
Yeah, I mean, the Gamecock fan base has bought in completely. If you watch that game last night, obviously it was in Greenville, South Carolina, but the South Carolina fan base took over the arena. You're going to have a huge contingency of Carolina fans who will make that trip to Dallas for the Final Four this coming weekend. Yep. It's really taken on its own place within sort of the fabric of South Carolina's athletic department. And Dawn Staley, I mean, I don't know at what point you get to officially call it a dynasty, but if they can complete this season undefeated with a second straight national championship, a third overall,
yeah.
I think it's five Final Fours, yep, in 8 years. I mean, insane.
It's as good a resume as it can be. Wes, thank you for the input, man. Appreciate it as always.
All right, guys. You have a good one, okay?
Wes Mitchell, Gamecock Central. Appreciate him coming on. And again, it's just a real thing. I think she's going to wind up coaching a men's team.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Is there chaos in your closet?
Look, Blouse, you've got some nerve hanging there like that.
I can't help it. I'm jammed in here next to this suit.
Hey, I'm a three-piece, all right? Which means I need a little more room.
You've got a lot of attitude for a linen suit.
I'm a polyester blend, sweetheart, and there needs to be room for men's clothes, too.
Hi, I'm Christina, and at Artisan Custom Closets, we help families organize and simplify their closets with customized storage solutions. See what's possible for your home at artisancustomclosets.com, and then call us for a free in-home consultation.
Now back to Southern Sports Today and the Chuck Oliver Show.
Nine states, 60 sticks. Thank y'all for the blessings. Chuck Oliver Show, we talk college football. It is what we do. Want to welcome on now, guy. I'm telling you, tremendous size. I'm not associated. They don't pay to come on. It's not like, let's bring on our official partners. No, it's just good sight. Good folks down there in Orlando. Started with John Cooper way back in the day. Again, good guy. Beard. And I never figured the beard thing down in Orlando, but it seems to have caught on. Saturday Down South. Tremendous sight. Has been since the day they cut the ribbon on it. Want to welcome on now, Connor O'Gara. Connor, how are you, brother?
I'm doing really well, man. Doing really, really well. I have not really figured out why I felt the need to grow a beard immediately after coming down to Orlando, but you know, it just kind of happened. I saw my surroundings; everybody had beards, and I'm like, all right, we're just gonna roll with this.
Yeah, well, like Stephen Garcia was down there. I was like, well, he showed up with it, so I got that. But everybody else, I was like, it's Orlando, man. You buy a coat, too? Let's talk SEC, and we'll start in the East, and we'll start as localist as it gets with you. Let's go to Gainesville. I am not high on the Gators for 2023, and I put it out as simply as possible. You can't catch Georgia this year, so you want to get closer, and they're getting further away, so... Now it's year three. I mean, like, literally, I just fast forward to past 12 games. I can't do that with a Florida program. It can't be March and I fast forward past 12 games. Am I being too hasty for this season?
No, I don't think you are. I think we're trying to figure out what in the world this plan is, because Billy Napier beefed up the support staff. He was very clear they're going to be active in the transfer portal, and they're going to build up this roster and find ways to shore up the areas that Dan Mullen with has been an issue. I mean, I think that Florida fans were kind of holding on to hope that Jaden Rashada was going to be the guy that plays out the way that it does. They're hoping, all right, we're going to go to the transfer portal. We're going to get a big-time addition. Graham Mertz ends up being the guy. Graham Mertz, that to me is puzzling that the quarterback situation has played out the way that it has. And I think Florida was hoping if Anthony Richardson is going to be one and done as a starter, it's going to be because he just had this awesome year and he's going to be en route to the NFL, having just given Florida a nice shot of life offensively. And that didn't happen at all. So it's kind of been worst case scenario. And I think it's fair to question whether or not Billy Napier is going to be in a similar spot coming off of year two.
All right. There are things I know are true, and losing your play caller and starting quarterback, that will undo a season. And I'm going to be at Harris in Murphy, North Carolina in 2 weeks. And I'm literally going to walk to the window and hand someone my money and bet that it doesn't matter in Athens. Like, literally, I'm dismissing what I know is the one thing above all else that will derail a great season. Am I dismissing that too quickly?
No, look, I mean, I think – and apologies, my phone actually just went to Bluetooth here, so apologies if the audio is a little bit different. Look, I think that's perfectly fine, because the schedule sets up about as well as one could ask. This Georgia team, man, like, what's the world in which they don't go 12-0? Are they losing at Tennessee this year? I don't think so. I was saying that they were going to lose at home to Tennessee last year. But I think that you look at this team and say, well, so many of the elements around the quarterback position are still so favorable. And the weapons that whoever wins the starting quarterback job is going to have to work with, in my opinion, that'll be Carson Beck. I think that you still look at that and say, man, that is a legitimate championship contender. Now, is Mike Bobo going to be the difference in whether or not Georgia can repeat? In my opinion, he absolutely can be. I think that if we're assuming that you can just do all these things with extraordinary talent, I think that's taking away from the job that Todd Monken did. But, man, Kirby returns a ton of pieces on defense. They should be in a really, really good spot to run the table in the regular season. And going 12-0, coming off the heels of two consecutive national championships, that's about as good as you can ask for if you're wanting to place a national championship bet.
Chuck Oliver Show, wrapping up with Connor O'Gara in his car on his Bluetooth. And the last thing I want to ask you about is we had plenty of Kentucky fans, and rightfully so. I think they got the number one guy any position in the portal. We got Devin Leary, and I was like, well, yeah, last year you had a top 10 guy, NFL draft at quarterback, and you didn't block for him, so none of it mattered. Will Kentucky block for Devin Leary this year? Because he's potentially a great player. If they don't block for him, it doesn't matter.
I actually just got off the phone with Devin Leary 2 hours ago.
Wow. Tell me you're kidding about that.
No, I'm not kidding about that.
That's fantastic.
I had a great conversation with him about a half hour, digging into his background. And I asked him that same question. Like, hey, what if the line play just doesn't improve? What if it just doesn't improve? And you being the guy who's been injured throughout his career and has had some pretty unique injuries, if you dig into even the pec injury for a quarterback, which is super, super rare. Not enough people talk about that. But he said, you know what? I have loved the way that this offensive line has approached this year, because they see everything. They see how well documented it is that they were not good last year, and they addressed that in the transfer portal. I think that they're in a very favorable spot to be better. Mark Stoops' teams year after year don't struggle that way in the trenches. And if you saw the way that he called out his team late last week, coming off a spring break and saying, yeah, I'm really disappointed, this is lackluster, this effort. Mark Stoops is not messing around. He's not. And I think there's a really likely scenario in which Devin Leary ends up being a better Kentucky quarterback than Will Levis was behind a bad offensive line, more experienced receivers this year, really similar talented group coming back with Berrian Brown, Dane Key, and then to have Robinson, the former transfer from Virginia Tech. So I look at this situation. I think it's set up better for success. Also with my doppelganger, Liam Cohen, operating the controls of the offense as opposed to Rich Gangarella, who just did not work at Kentucky. I think they're in a really favorable spot with Devin Leary as the guy. He's my number two quarterback in the SEC coming into this season.
All right, I actually do have one more question, and I'm just going to say, and I didn't do my research on this, but I'm jogging my memory, the long trip that it is. Every time I can recall, a head coach, you either hand over the play-calling duties or you get a contract extension and more money. How did Eli get both of those in Como?
That's a great question. That contract is baffling, man. Like, if you haven't dug into the buyout numbers with that, and if you kind of don't really understand, like, what Eli Drinkwitz was primary play caller, didn't have an offensive coordinator, now he has an offensive coordinator, was able to get, you know, a guy from Fresno State who, you know, has a nice little background, but is still, like, that's still a massive question, and he's going to be the new play caller. But the buyout is $20 million. How in the world did they renegotiate a contract in which after year four, his buyout is still $20 million when he is yet to have a winning season at Mizzou? And it wasn't like he took over what Arkansas was under Chad Morris. They were a mediocre team at the time when he took that program over. It's baffling, man. I really don't understand it. I think he is an agent who's working very hard for him, and I think that there are a lot of questions that we still need to figure out about Mizzou and whether or not they can have a decent offense. I mean, I think that's the biggest one. They've been so heavy on their backs, Larry Roundtree year one, Tyler Beatty year two. And I think that a lot of people are wondering, like, is what suggests that this is going to be better besides the fact that they're second in the SEC in percentage of returning production?
Yeah, his agent's Jimmy, isn't it?
I think so, but isn't it 12 of 14? And I wasn't sure if there was one who isn't, because Pittman is now with Jimmy as well. So, like, I always lose track of the one or two in the SEC who doesn't have Jimmy Sexton as their agent.
You would. Like, you're trying to outthink, like, it's easy. Like, Walmart's the giant evil company, but their prices are the lowest. You know, you're trying to outthink something here. Connor, I appreciate your time as always, man. I know you're busy, brother. You got to go talk to Devin Leary.
Yeah, no, it was a great conversation. Absolutely. Appreciate it, Chuck. Anytime.
All right, Connor O'Gary again, Saturday Down South. Jimmy Sexton is, I know he is. He's Eli's agent. And it is supposed to be one of those things are true. Because it happened, by the way. He handed over the play-calling duties. Eli Drinkwitz, who came up as an offensive assistant and then like an analyst. And then he was a position coach and he's a coordinator and he's a head coach for a minute. And it's always been about Eli and the play sheet, and he's handing over the play sheet. It's supposed to be you either are like Jimbo. It was just I'm handing over the play sheet. It was just that. Lane Kiffin, it was just I'm getting a new contract. I don't know how it's both of those. God bless Jimmy. Does anybody listening know Jimmy? Because I don't know Jimmy. And I don't have anything about it. I want Jimmy to have a reason. Actually, I want Jimmy to be my agent. Fine, he's my agent. I want Jimmy to have a reason to be my agent. God bless him. I don't know of any other example where both of those are true. Because, like, what I didn't hear at a College Station, I don't know, Dan, did I miss this? Jimbo, you will give up the play call. And by the way, everybody, give it up for Jimbo. Give it up. It was just that first half. So, normally, it doesn't happen that way. All right, we're going to break. We'll come back, wrap up on this Tuesday next.
Always college football time in the South. Now back to more of the king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
Having absolutely no problems. I mean, you saw today he's already checking plays at the line of scrimmage and seeing how the defense is aligned and getting from might be changing run schemes, might be changing to a play action pass or a drop back game. So he's done a great job of approaching the installation and learning it, and I really like where he's at.
That's Zach Arnett. He is the Mississippi State head coach, and he's talking about his quarterback, Will Rogers, and the new offense, which is not like the old offense. He won't be passing the ball as much, but he could have more yards, maybe. I don't know. It is a much, it's supposed to be, it's advertised as a much, much more aggressive offense. It means it's much more normal. It's, will be more downfield. Mike Leach, man, his way worked for him. And again, his way, his system, his play calls, his, I want to say it was either six or eight principles he had for the receivers, and everything just worked off of those. And so you could say it was either six or eight like plays, basically. So that's what that is. But Zach Arnett with the new offense, and Will Rogers is a talented guy, and he's big enough to do it, and they've got receivers. It's just going to look different. And the numbers of attempts and completions will be down. I don't know. The yards don't have to be down. So that was him talking a little post-practice there. Chuck Oliver Show continuing on this Tuesday. And I had mentioned earlier in the program, just as an offshoot, Dawn Staley is going to be hired to coach a men's team. I believe that could happen. And there's a lady named Becky Hammond, who she might still be with the San Antonio Spurs, or she was, or I think she got hired somewhere. But she was talk about maybe the first, like, an NBA squad. I think Dawn Staley could coach a men's, like, maybe this offseason. That could happen. But it is a big-time deal for you to even be able to ask a question where you preface it with, all right, I'm not saying it's going to be Pat Summitt and the Lady Vols. No, that you can preface it that you're not going to compare her to something that you can't attain. I saw a interview with David Letterman, and he'd been asked about what influence did Johnny Carson have on you. He was like, he was the influence. And like, what do you mean? He said, I grew up. He's like, he was the influence. I wanted to be Johnny Carson. I wanted to host a late night talk show. He said, and then you actually get there and do it the first time, and after about 30 minutes, you realize, okay, that's not going to happen. He said it was two segments. He said, late night with David Letterman, he said, after the second segment, he realized, okay, I'm not going to be Johnny Carson. You may realize early, all right, well, that's not going to happen. And so you kind of adjust, whatever the goal may be. Anyway, we were talking about, earlier in the program, first hour one was tremendous as far as guests goes. Dan did a tremendous job every single day, working his, digital Rolodex. If you don't know what a Rolodex is, go find out. Bob Ballou from out at the, CBS Austin, out yonder, did a tremendous job, with the Longhorns program, always does. And we had him earlier in hour one, and then Palmer Toms as well. We were able to talk with him, team writer for On Three earlier this hour, Wes Mitchell, talking Gamecocks, and then Connor O'Gara from Saturday Down South. So big day for guests and just a lot going on around college football. One of the things I had mentioned was the quarterback battle, and I brought this up with Connor a little bit, the quarterback battle that I'm not as interested in Athens. And that I don't really believe that that's what we're looking at, that maybe it is going to be Carson Beck, and maybe he's the guy who's going to wind up being the starter, and they just roll right along, and it's seamless, and it's like there never was a change. I need to force myself, like on my daily to-do list, to pay attention to what's going on with the quarterback battle in Athens. And it's almost like this is the topic equivalent of when you put the vitamin beside the coffee maker or your toothbrush. I have to remind myself that Georgia isn't immune to losing a guy like Stetson Bennett, because he was the answer. And do you know who wasn't the answer? JT Daniels wasn't their answer. He would have continued to be the starting quarterback, but you had Stetson Bennett gave Kirby Smart enough of an option that he chose go another way. And again, I've quoted this maybe, and it was a pretty bottom line sentiment that whatever it was, 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks into the season, Kirby realized it was going to be every Saturday morning, hey, is JT feeling good? He said, we're not doing that. Stetson, you're the starter. Let's roll. And he moved on. So he had a guy that was the answer. JT Daniels had 5 stars or high four star, maybe. He wasn't the answer. Jamie Newman was an NFL stud. He was number one transfer quarterback coming from Wake Forest where he did everything. He wasn't the answer. DeJuan Mathis wasn't the answer. There have been guys who've come through Athens, and they were not the answer. Jacob Eason might have been the answer. Jake Fromm really seemed to be the answer. The answer might have gone to Columbus. Like, think of all the, I want to say, you look at the quarterback position, Stetson, my gosh, by far, he's been the answer. Line up everybody who started for Kirby. Answer, he's that guy. And then there's like everybody else who wasn't nearly as impactful as him. It's like a topic vitamin. Hey, Chuck, pay attention to Carson Beck. Hey, Chuck, DJ was, we even got to see him play. DJ would go play against an elite opponent and then play against Wake Forest, too. But wow, look at the numbers. I'm convinced. I didn't have that with Carson Beck. Did he throw 5 touchdowns against, he was part of that onslaught. It is a sobering thought, a little star each day. Remind yourself, Georgia, as all that they have coming back on defense. We talked about that earlier in the program with Palmer. I didn't even mention some of that. Jamon Dumas. We didn't even talk about Jamon Dumas Johnson. We talked about Smile Munda not being him. All that talent they got back. Maybe Nylon Green's finally a big-time ball player. If they don't have a quarterback, it can undo all of it. You would have to coach around the limitations there, which you can do. But that's not how you win a championship, and that's where the goal is. Dan, how's your Tuesday doing?
6 career touchdown passes, by the way, for Carson Beck. 4 last year, 2 the year prior. Did not throw any in the national championship game, which I thought he did, but maybe it was a couple of handoffs that broke. But that is the stat line for Carson Beck. Chuck, wouldn't you agree twofold on this? Number one, everybody wants theirs. And number two, it kind of goes off of what we talked about yesterday with Josh Pate's line about, you know, when you're interviewing for the coaching job, it probably is more important than anything. Whatever you want, go in there with a checklist and go in there and say, this is what I need. I'm coming from a program, say you come from Clemson, for example, and you know what winning looks like. So you go up there and you ask, are you going to give me this for recruiting? We'll give you that. If there is any hesitation at all, I think that the number one thing that you need to say is, well, can we at least work towards this? And if you are still getting any uncertainty there, then you move on. The second part is everybody wants theirs. Did you see what UCF just offered for Gus Malzahn and the football program there? Let me run this down. It's going to be called their quote-unquote football campus. New locker rooms. All right, everybody gets new locker rooms. Weight room, training room. All right, great stuff there. New football ops building. Of course, you need that. You need everybody to have nice office space, coaching office space right there. A hydrotherapy pool. Recovery river. So not just a cold tub or a hot tub, it's a recovery river. I don't know what that means. Maybe Wim Hof or somebody else can tell us exactly what that means.
You know what that is? They've got those like blue inflatable tubes, and yeah, they got a lazy river.
So there you go. So instead of getting into the big wash tubs that are out there on the practice field where trainers are filling them up with bagged ice and all of that right there, you've got it already built in?
Damn, we know, Gus. Get us broadcasting there. They've got a water park there. They've got a Snapdragon. They've got the Devil's Punch Bowl. They've got water slides, dude. That's what they're describing. They have a lazy river.
I'm working on it. But if nothing else, the tropical entrance and tailgating zone, a lot of people have that as well. But that is just something else that feeds into this. I always love the people who say, oh, well, that shouldn't matter. All these things shouldn't matter. you're not in position that these 17 and 18 year old kids are, where they go
with it.
That's it. Where they go to Alabama and they see a waterfall that is part of all of these different things, or complete just, you know, laying back lockers that they have at LSU. Yes, it does matter, because if nothing else, it shows them I care enough for you to come here and have the best.
Get gorgeous with it. Absolutely. And I got no issue with any of that. I think it's fantastic. Dan, David, everybody associated with the program, thank y'all. Thank y'all for listening, the guests for your time. And everybody, we will rejoin in 22 hours from now. We'll have recharged batteries, and we'll deal with college football for two more hours. It is the Chuck Oliver Show.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season.